168 years after it was published, Alexandre Dumas' novel, The Count of Monte Cristo, is considered a literary classic. According to Luc Sante, it has become a fixture of Western civilization's literature, as inescapable and immediately identifiable as Mickey Mouse, Noah's Flood, and the story of Little Red Riding Hood. But did you know that it was based on a real historical figure, Alex Dumas, who was the author's father? Tom Rees tells the story of Alex Dumas in The Black Count. It's published by Crown. I'm very pleased it has brought him back to our show today. Welcome back.
Hi, Leonard.
And the last time you were here, we talked about your book, The Orientalist, about a colorful Jewish writer who passed himself off as a Muslim and wrote an official biography of Mussolini. How did you get from there to here?
Well, you know, in between, I thought about doing Ulysses Grant or Lincoln, but I tend to gravitate towards the more unknown figures.
And both required a lot of detective work on your part, didn't they?
Yes, they did. There's something about doing a biography where you're really the first one, and there's an excitement about treading on fresh snow that I just love.
So tell us about Alex Dumas. It wasn't Alexander, but Alexander was part of his name. Why did he call himself Alex?
Well, originally, he's a man who changed names a few times. I found that when he first arrived in France, he was listed in the ship's manifest as the slave Alexander, because an incredible backstory that's at the beginning of the book, which is that I found out that his own father had sold him into slavery to buy a ship ticket. And in fact, it hadn't been a sale. He'd pawned him into slavery, because I found the pawn ticket that said that when his father returned to France and claimed this inheritance and noble title, he was allowed to buy this black son back. And he did, and he brings him over to France. And anyway, all these incredible adventures start to happen to him very fast. And
But it begins in what is now Haiti, the French colony of Saint-Domingue.
Yes.
And in an economy that was based on sugar, done by slave labor. Dumas' father, as you said, was a French nobleman. His mother was a slave.
His father was a kind of ne'er-do-well renegade nobleman who had gone to the colony to make his fortune, but really barely got out of the colony with his life. He was a fugitive, actually, in the hills of Haiti for more than 30 years, living under an alias. And that's
producing children with with one of the slave women.
With whom he lived incognito, actually calling himself Antoine of the Islands. He had this very fancy long title that he didn't dare tell anybody because the family was on the run. And when he did get a chance to go back to France and inherit this title, and he brings his favorite son, this boy whose name is Thomas Alexander, actually, back to France. And actually, that means that the young black teenager soon inherits the title of Count. And because of the incredible situation I found was going on in France at the time, even though France is possessing the greatest slave empire and the cruelest slave empire in the world, Versailles was built on the backs.
This is before the revolution. This is Louis XVI, France.
Exactly. It's on the eve of the revolution. What I found out is there are still, even then, these incredible opportunities for black men in France that don't exist anywhere else in the world, and that's because of a forgotten civil rights movement that's been going on there. That's another forgotten story here that's really incredible.
Well, let's back up a bit. So was Dumas born a slave? Did he take his mother's name? Because he obviously didn't take his father's at the time.
There are stories within stories within stories here. Dumas, the name Alexandre Dumas, which would become so famous, I found the origin of that on our hero's enlistment record when after 10 years of training to be one of France's great swordsmen.
He had gone to school as the son of a nobleman?
As the son of a nobleman. Basically, we sort of have skirted around who's the question of Alex Dumas, and part of the reason is because Alex Dumas is one of the most unlikely, unbelievable characters in history. He sounds like a novel character. Here's this guy who he's sort of the ultimate underdog who comes from slavery. He is born into slavery. He's the property of his father. As I said, at one point, his father recklessly essentially sells him to get some spare cash. But by the time he's a late teenager, he's thrown into this whole other life where he's being trained as a nobleman.
He's a dark-skinned boy in a white world.
Absolutely, he's actually very dark-skinned and really sticks out. But that, I think, is the key to what made him such an incredible personality, incredible figure, is that he's always this ultimate outsider. And he eventually, as we'll talk about, rises to command more troops than Napoleon for a time within the French army.
But he had a falling out with his father. What was that over?
Indeed. He has a falling out with his father. I think it's really just that it's partly his, this is a family that have been living in, as I said, on the run in the hills of Haiti, and suddenly they inherit a vast fortune. It's like something out of the Count of Monte Cristo, and great money tends to corrupt. And his father is very prone to corruption. So his father takes up with a woman 50 years younger than him. And Alex, you know, for a time, enjoys this fantastic education and a life of escorting women in, you know, the pre-revolutionary Paris, and it's all very romantic. But there's a falling out over money and lifestyle and over this new kind of concubine wife that his father takes. And Alex just says, I don't want anything else to do with you. And when he goes from his father's mansion to the enlistment station and enlists in the lowest rank of the army, sort of throws off everything he's sort of achieved at that point. Or
he enlists as a common soldier rather than as the son of a nobleman into the Queen's Dragoons. And then the French Revolution occurs.
Erupts, breaks out. And
was he a
everything.
Supporter?
Oh, enormously, enormously. And he becomes a supporter also with, I mean, there are these amazing parts of his story at every turn. The man who'd been teaching him to be a great fencing master in the years we're talking about turns out to have been another son of a slave, another black man living in Paris who was the undisputed fencing champion of Europe at the time. And this guy and Alex formed something called the Black Legion. And it's actually the official name is the Free Legion of Americans. And that's another fascinating thing. I found out that they called it that because these guys were all black men or men of color. And in Paris at the time, Americans were understood to be black men. So the original Americans in Paris were these mixed-race swordsmen, and they just
even
embraced.
Though Jefferson and Ben Franklin were also there.
In fact, I found there's some terrific moment in the book where I got from John Adams, who was visiting them, John Adams' impression of these black swordsmen, and he says he meets the fencing teacher, and he says this guy is the best shot in the world. He describes all the things he can do, and he also says, and he's basically the head of the Paris Opera, and he's black, you know. And to an American, this is just too much to believe. But even in this situation, the revolution changes everything for these guys, and it just opens up limitless opportunities to somebody of incredible talent and mettle, and that is Alex Dumas.
Tom Reese's latest book is The Black Count, Glory, Revolution, Betrayal, and the Real Count of Monte Cristo. So you said that he rises quickly through the ranks. How long before he's named a general?
Well, I mean, the first thing that brings him to the army's attention is that in 1792, I'm not sure people realize this, this was the first German invasion of France. It's sort of a precursor to what happened.
Because they were upset about this revolutionary spirit, they were afraid that it might spread to the rest of Europe.
Absolutely. And a Germanic coalition formed on the eastern border of France and actually invaded France, much the same route that the little south of what the Germans took 200 years later. And Alex first distinguishes himself by taking 13 enemy soldiers without firing a shot, marching them back to camp, and then sort of flamboyantly donating all of the weapons that he takes to the revolution. And so it's the first time that he's kind of gets some prominence. But very shortly after that, he kind of continues to do these incredible feats. And then it's not 13 guys. I found records of him taking 50 men. And then there's a point where they overwhelm a few hundred. And he becomes this sort of gets this reputation of a kind of super soldier of the revolution. And as a sign of what that did for him, I found in the records of an incredibly racist Prussian-trained officer.
Called him a black devil.
No. Well, that's actually what the Germans then named him. But this Prussian officer who's writing in his memoirs, you know, how much he hates blacks. He can't be in the same room with a Negro. And he also hates Jews for all these reasons. He's all of the racist stereotypes we'd imagine. But then he puts right there, but I know this man, Alex Dumas, and I must say, this guy may be the finest soldier in the world. And so he's just, Alex Dumas impresses people by who he is.
He's also very tall by French standards. So he must have really stood out in a battle.
Oh yeah, no, I mean he's tall. He kind of looks like a movie star. So in every way, he is just this. It's crazy. It's almost like he is viewed even at the time almost as a kind of superhero. But the other thing is he has this incredibly good spirit and generous spirit, so that even though he rises sort of meteoric rise in the army, which we can talk about, he's promoted to general within essentially 3 years, and then he's given command of 50,000
troops. So he's still in his
20s. He's at the end of his, at the end of his 20s, he's 29, and then by the time he's 31, they give him command of 50,000 troops and tell him to conquer the Alps for France, and they send this kid from the jungle into a glacier.
And he got a reputation as a compassionate humanitarian when civilians and non-combatants were involved. Do you think that his early life as a slave affected his thinking about governance?
Absolutely. I mean, Alex Dumas got incredible power in his hands during his life in many different ways. And I've seen thousands of records and letters from both the people who served by his side and also the people who were under him, who, you know, he was for a while the military governor of a big region of Italy that he had conquered. And everyone from both sides, they all write about this amazing man who never abused his power. And in fact, at a time when everybody else was, he was their defender. He was really this kind of white knight. And I think that's also what's so inspiring. If you know the novels, especially the Musketeers and a bit the character of the Count, there is this sort of goodness beneath the hardness. Here's a guy who really is ready to protect the weak.
So The Three Musketeers is Dumas, his son's other famous book. We should point out that Alex Dumas married a well-to-do woman and then had, after all of his travails, he had the son who would write these stories. The Three Musketeers, was that also based on real-life characters?
Well, it's based on Alex Dumas. That's what's incredible.
In both cases, he made the character white, even though Alexandre Dumas was a man of color as well.
That's fascinating. And then it's also it's just interesting to note that when he made The Three Musketeers, and I found exploits and anecdotes in the novel that are exactly taken from reports of things that Alex Dumas did, he had to divide his characters, because if it was all one character, who the heck would believe it?
Well, we don't have a lot of time, but we should point out that Dumas got on Napoleon's bad side, and that changed everything. What happened?
Well, I think for one thing, it was this sort of Greek tragedy between two warriors who had absolutely opposite attributes. And so you have Dumas, who's this incredible physical warrior, man of incredible bravery, tenacity. He's in any situation, he will lead out in front of his men. And, when he was in the Alps there, he found a way to climb ice cliffs and take a position that was like taking the guns of Navarone. And so he's sort of like a special forces type of guy. And, Napoleon is obviously this genius strategist. And when the two go together to Egypt, there I found incredible descriptions of how when the Egyptians saw them riding across the sand together, they saw Dumas and they thought he was like this ancient hero. They thought he was like a centaur on top of his horse because he was so at one with the horse. And they saw him and then they described seeing this scrawny little man behind him. And that was Napoleon. And they couldn't believe that we were sure that Dumas must be the commander of the expedition. And I think it was that sort of comparison that drove Napoleon crazy. But also Dumas confronted Napoleon very directly in the desert there about what he was doing to the French army and to the French nation, and said, "You are betraying the Republican revolutionary
cause."
Because
Napoleon had this authoritarian side, which became more and more apparent over the years.
He had ambition to take over the revolution.
Now, we just have seconds, but Dumas was captured and imprisoned by the King of Naples?
Yes, it's, again, an amazing story that we don't have time to go into.
And that's what leads to the famous book, The Count of Monte Cristo.
Yes, one of the most incredible things I found that allowed me to write this book was the report that was in Alex Dumas' own hand of his ordeal in this prison dungeon in Italy. And in fact, that was the basis for his son to write The Count of Monte Cristo.
And Napoleon isn't too eager to have him released, but eventually he is released. How did he fare under during Napoleon's reign after he was released?
Absolutely terrible. It was a case of persecution, the same persecution of Alex Dumas as the great hero who is buried. In fact, Napoleon, when he had a painting done of him, Napoleon insisted that they paint the black man in the center out and paint him over with a blonde, blue-eyed cavalry officer.
So we have no paintings of Dumas done by Baron Gros.
No, we don't. The great paintings of Dumas have been lost. Supposedly there was one by David, but Napoleon did everything he could to suppress him. He screamed at the Dumas supporters, "Never mention that man in my name. I'm sorry, in my presence." But all along, here is the young son there who is conspiring to write his father's adventures back into history through fiction.
And how close is the novel to the real story?
Oh, the novel, you have to read the story to see, but it's really remarkable. There's so many incidents that lovers of the novels, they all write to me now and tell me that I just want to go and read all the Dumas novels over again because it's so much more incredible.
Obviously, father telling son about his life and his adventures, and then he left those diaries.
I found huge reams of letters as well.
Is Dumas remembered at all in France these days?
General Alex Dumas there was one statue of him built at the beginning of the 20th century.
And the Nazis melted it.
The Nazis melted it.
Tom Rees, The Black Count, Glory, Revolution, Betrayal, and The Real Count of Monte Cristo, published by Crown. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks a lot.